one of the important aspects of NLP. Again, as I mentioned before, we tend to be a little outcome oriented in NLP. So it's really good to have clear, well-formed outcomes. And this can be in a much bigger sense in your life of what you want for yourself in your life, personally and professionally, that we've already explored a little bit. But also when you're working with other people, if you're doing a piece of change work with somebody else, or many of you mentioned coaching or assisting other people in making changes, it's really helpful, one, to help them get a well-formed outcome, to get clear on what it is that they want, but also you as the practitioner to get clear on what you want for that person as you're working with them. And so we want to get a little more specific on our outcomes. So in NLP, we have what we call the well-formedness conditions for outcomes. And if I'm correct, on page 59 in your handouts, there is a list of those. So that's usually the first place we begin with NLP, is to ask, what do you want? What is it that you want? Now, there's an amazing thing that happens when you get clear on an outcome. When you get clear on what it is that you want, your system starts to organize toward it instantly. So it literally changes aspects of your brain. Some of you may be aware of, there's a structure in your brain called the reticular activating system. And it acts as kind of a filter in your brain and in your attention. Our capacity to pay attention to things consciously is somewhat limited. So we can pay attention to a certain range of phenomena consciously and intentionally. With the background of the mind, the unconscious mind is paying attention to things, of course, unconsciously. So the reticular activating system, depending on your goal, depending on your intent, what happens is it changes your perceptual filters. And you start seeing things in the world that are relevant to your goal, relevant to your outcome. They might be threats to it, or it may be opportunities for it. How many of you noticed how many refrigerator ads there were in the paper last Sunday? Anybody? Okay. Probably, unless you were in the market for one, you probably didn't notice them at all, right? They don't appear in your experience because you don't have that distinction for it or that filter for it. But if you were looking for one, then all of a sudden now you start seeing every ad. Or the experience of, like, if you've bought a car and now all of a sudden you see every other car like it on the road. Remember, one of my first cars I got when I was younger was a Suzuki Samurai. Do you remember those? Yeah. The little Jeeps kind of a thing. And the ad was beep, beep, hi, you know, and that people would wave at each other. And it's funny, Suzuki Samurai owners really do that when they first came out. You know, pass by another one and beep, beep, hi, wave to each other kind of a thing. But I saw every single one of them on the road and noticed all these details about them. Like, how were those different from mine? So when you have that intent, when you have a goal or an outcome, it starts to shift your perception, and your system starts to work toward it automatically. So there's some conditions that you can do to get clear on your outcomes to increase the effectiveness of your system organizing toward your outcome. So when we ask, what do you want, sometimes that can be, a lot of times people are clear on what they don't want. So they might say, well, I don't want to smoke, or I don't want to be overweight, or I don't want to be, you know, mean to my kids, or whatever. They get clear on what they don't want. The difficulty with that is the brain isn't so good at processing negation. Negation can only happen in language. It can't happen in primary experience. What that means is that there's, you know, a million different things not happening in this room right now, and we're not perceiving it. Right? Some would say there's not a circus going on in here right now. And until I said the word circus, it didn't even enter your consciousness. Right? So when we get clear on what we do want, like if I got in a taxi cab again and the driver said, well, where do you want to go? And I say, well, I don't want to go to the Elsinore Theater. It's like, okay, where do you want to go? Well, I don't want to go to the Lancaster Mall either. Well, where do you want to go? Cab driver doesn't know where to take me until I give a specific address to where I want to go. And it's the reason why we don't go to the store with a list of things we're not going to buy. Be a pretty long list, right? So one of the things that's really helpful once you get clear on what you want is to make sure that it's stated in the positive, what you want instead of what you don't want. So sometimes if somebody has a negative thing like, well, I don't want to be self-conscious. So sometimes we would ask, well, if you weren't being self-conscious, what would you be doing instead? Or how would you feel instead? Or how would you like to be instead? Something along those lines. So that we get them to shift their attention to what they do want. As soon as the attention is on what they do want, your cybernetically organized system starts to move towards it, starts to organize toward it automatically. It's also helpful to know your evidence procedure for knowing whether or not you've achieved it. Like if somebody, if their goal, for example, was to become thinner, how would you know that you've achieved your goal? Would it be a number on a scale, that you would look on a scale and you would see a number? Would it be how you feel in your clothing? Would it be maybe how you feel physically, energetically? How do you feel? That you have some criteria for knowing that you've arrived, that you've met your goal. So it's helpful to have some kind of evidence and to have that evidence be in sensory-based terms. So what would you actually see? What would you hear? What would you feel if you'd actually achieved your outcome? This gets really important when we're doing NLP processes with each other to know whether or not a change has occurred. Like, how do you know if the person's been successful in their process? Are they in a more resourceful state than they were when you started? And how would you know that? Like, what would you notice about them? Would it be in their language? Would it be in their facial expression? Would it be in their breathing? Would it be some combination of those things that you would know that you were successful in your process? So having some sensory-based evidence for knowing that you've achieved your outcome. It's also useful to be context-specific. Like if somebody said, well, I want to be happy. I just want to be happy all the time. That would be maybe a little weird if you were at your grandmother's funeral, right? So it's really, really helpful to be specific in the context. Where, when, and with whom do you want to have that? If you want to be a more effective persuader, for example, what specific context do you want to be a more specific persuader? Is it with your children to get them to clean their room? Is it with your, if you're a sales professional or marketing professional, is it in the context of work? If you were in the dating realm, is it in the ability to attract the kind of partner that you want to have in your life? So it's really helpful to get specific on the context that you want to have your outcome. Can your outcome be initiated and controlled by you? Is it something that you can do? Sometimes people will come in with a goal like, well, I want my husband to listen to me. Okay. Now, is that something that is initiated and controlled by you? Okay. So we want to look at, it could be an influence thing, but it's more helpful to go, how could I be different that would invite a different response from my partner? So what is it that I want, how do I want to be different so that I can invite a different response from my husband or my wife? What are the consequences? What are the possible positive and negative consequences of having your outcome? And this starts to touch a little bit on an NLP concept we call ecology, which is if you change one part of a system, it's going to affect the other parts of the system, just like in the environment. You know, if we make changes to the water or to the air or to the soil, it's going to affect other parts of the system. So with NLP, we really want to be mindful of the ecology of the changes that we want to make in terms of ourselves and working with other people. To give you an example, colleague of mine, a hypnotherapist friend in Salt Lake City, was working with a woman who she came in wanting more confidence. She wanted to be confident enough to stand up to her husband. Apparently, he was a fairly abusive person. She wanted to be able to stand up to him and to get up enough confidence to eventually leave him. Well, as you'll soon learn here with NLP, it's very easy to help a person achieve a state of confidence like that. Well, sure enough, she got the confidence, she went back and stood up to him, and he beat her nearly to death. So in that context, that might not have been the best approach, the best ecological approach for her. Maybe it was another set of resources that would help her leave that situation in a safer way. So what are the positive and negative consequences of having your outcome is important to consider. Is there potential for changing other areas, like it, you might lose something of importance if you make this change over here? So the resources, like what resources do you need to get your outcome? Are they internal resources or are they external resources? Like, do you need additional finances or support from somebody else to achieve your outcome? Or are they more internal resources, things like confidence or calmness or motivation to do something differently? Is it a manageable chunk size? Is it a large global type outcome? Like, I want world peace. My outcome is world peace. Well, that's very noble. It's a very noble outcome. But that's a pretty big chunk, right? You might want to chunk it down into something that's a little bit more manageable. Like, I would just like to have a little peace in my heart to begin with. Maybe a little peace in my family, a little peace with my friends and so on. And then maybe expanding out into the world in some way. What is the first step to achieving your outcome? So where do you begin? What would be the first thing that you would do in order to make the change to get to your outcome? What time frames are involved? Is this something that can happen in minutes or hours, weeks, months, years? So what time frames would be involved? If you're building a business, for example, or if you're establishing a coaching practice, it's really helpful to build in realistic time frames for how to get your business up and launched. How many ways are there to get your outcome? Are there multiple ways? Is there only one way to achieve it, or are there multiple ways of achieving it? And then it's also useful to step into, in NLP we call it future pacing. And this is where you imagine that it's already occurred. You imagine that you've already achieved your outcome, and you step into that scenario as if it were already true. And notice what that's like. Does it feel right? Does it feel appropriate? Maybe you notice things that you didn't notice before? Sometimes, for example, in couples, you know, they go at different, everybody changes in their own rate, their own personal evolution, their own path. And if all of a sudden one person makes a great leap forward in their personal evolution, and now all of a sudden you're not quite in the same place you were together, and it may mean that the relationship needs to shift somehow. And you might not even notice that until you step into that and go, well, gosh, what's it like for my partner if I make this great leap forward in my personal evolution? So these are the well-formedness conditions. I wanted to run through them just very quickly. Do you have any questions on any of these distinctions? Yeah. So can it be initiated and controlled by you? Okay. And then the resources are, what are the internal or external resources that you need to get to your outcome? Was I correct? This is on page 59? The questions? Okay.
What's the key difference between the consequence and the future pace?
The consequence, you could actually do these together. Like, it would be useful, I think, to step into the future pace, really imagine being there, and then I think you would be in a better place to get clear on what are the positive and negative consequences of it. So this, I think, is a way to get to this. So what I'm going to invite you to do is to get back with the person that you interviewed initially when you introduced yourself and you shared your goal with that person. Get back with that person and interview them using the well-formedness conditions about one of their goals. They're either a personal or professional goal. And literally walk them through. You can act as a consultant for them and ask these questions and see if you can help them get more clear on their goal, get more clear and more specific. And this is going to be extremely helpful for your learning in this class. Because if you get a nice, well-formed outcome for what you want to have happen in this class, dramatically increases the likelihood that you're going to get it. That'd be a good thing, wouldn't it? Okay. Any questions? Okay. Rock and roll. find your partner. So what happens, as you got more clear on your goal, what did you notice about the way you thought about it? Was it, I saw a good look on your face. What happened? Huh?
Got more excited.
You got more excited?
Yeah.
What else?
Seemed easier to achieve.
Awesome. Was that it?
More definite things in place.
Uh-huh.
Just not daydreaming, it's just like there are more steps to follow.
Yeah, so you got clear on the actual steps to
action
get there.
Steps.
Yeah, very nice.
I just wanted to add to the feeling more achievable that I first thought maybe I could hopefully hope to achieve this in the next year, but then I started feeling a little maybe more aggressive and thought maybe by the end of this year, get a stronger foothold.
Mm-hmm. For how many of you does it seem more real now? Like it's not only, like it's doable, yeah?
Just breaking it down into what are the steps, you know, that helps a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess I went from I want to I will.
Ooh. Uh-huh, that's huge. That's now, nice. Try this on just for size. If you say, for example, I hope I enjoy my dinner tonight, okay? Versus, I want to enjoy my dinner tonight. So say it the first time again, just I hope I enjoy my dinner tonight. And notice when you think about your dinner, what that's like. Notice the pictures in your head, things you might, the inner dialogue, the feelings that come. You say, I hope I enjoy my dinner tonight. And then say it again. I want to enjoy my dinner tonight. Notice how you picture that, what sound you hear, how that feels. And now say, I intend to enjoy my dinner tonight. What's that like? It's different, isn't it?
I hope and I want leave it open to for something negative to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And I intend to means I'm going to turn the phone off and I'm going to enjoy my dinner tonight. Nothing's going to interrupt.
Right. So yeah, like I hope it's like there could all kinds of things could happen, you know? And enjoyment would be one among many possible outcomes to that, right? But when you say I intend, it's like, okay, this is what's going to happen. This is what I'm going to make happen. Was another? Fear? Uh-huh. Yeah. So this is powerful stuff, isn't it?
Like you're solidifying it. And the intent to keep an awareness open so you can enjoy the moments as you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's more like the process. You're actually going to enjoy the process of it, as opposed to just that it's some destination out there off in the distance. Yeah.
Aligns together with intuition. And if people had ruined dinners before or bad experience before, the intuition going to be kind of with a memory of past.
Mm-hmm.
And that in that way, hope, the word hope, doesn't work as a pure hope.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
And when I hear people saying hope is a piece of fear or a piece of this or that, it means that their hope was interfered by something,
mm-hmm,
in their lives.
Yeah. It does. It kind of suggests that maybe there's something that's going to interfere with it. Yeah. Good insights. So, yeah.
Now it's within your own power to do it rather than some outside power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that true for many of the others that he said? Would you say it again?
Now within your own power to do it, rather than up to some third party or some outside force that's going to make it happen for you.
So when you say I intend, it's like I'm going to do this. I have the not only the power but the willingness to actually do it, as opposed to it just happening somehow. Yeah.
With hope, I get a sense that there's a lack of commitment, but with intent, there's like an active participation.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
When we were breaking it down to the steps, you know, I started to just get a hint. I would hear this voice going, well, okay, that's so simple. Why am I not doing it? So now I'm starting to get just a glimmer of some of the things that are blocking that process. And that was pretty interesting.
Yeah. So that's another thing, too, that is really helpful. When you get really clear on your goal, you might also get clear on what things you need to overcome or what things you need to get out of the way in order to achieve your goal.
Just clarify the word control. It's a very interesting, it said, can it be controlled by you? Talk a little bit about the word control.
As I understand it in NLP, what is the hardest thing to try to control? Other people's behavior. Right? To try to control, like literally control another person. So there's a lot of nuance to that word control, and for some it's a very negative term, has negative connotation. Like, how many of you would love to be controlled by somebody else? Okay? It's like, yeah, sign me up for that. Okay?
Yes.
Nobody wants to be controlled, nobody wants to be manipulated, right? So When we say control, what we're really asking is, what do you have choice about? Okay, is it something that I have choice with? Do I have a choice about other people's behavior, other people's thoughts and feelings? Do I have a choice about, you know, something in the external world, the external circumstance? And so what the intent of that question is to take you back into, what do you have choice about? What is it that you can change? And so, if you were to think of it as a spectrum, like on one end, there's a range of things that we have absolutely no control or choice about. You know, like most people would say the weather, for example, or when the next earthquake is going to hit, or, you know, something along those lines. Like, we don't know. We don't have any control over that. Now, so for things that we have no control over, then the resource is to adapt in some way. So with the weather, when the weather changes, we change our clothes. We get our umbrellas, unless you live in Oregon. And, you know, things like that, to adapt to the weather. Now, at the other end of the spectrum, there's the things that we have total choice about. Like, given my wardrobe, I chose what I was going to bring to wear to this weekend. Given the clothes that I have total choice about what I'm going to wear. I can wear it if it's dirty or if it's clean, if it smells good or not, I have choice. I can do that. In between those two spectrums is a zone of influence, which might be a little blending of what I have choice about and what I need to adapt to. And there's, I think, most of the phenomena in our lives are about that mid-range. We've got some choice, and we've got to adapt in some way as well. Does that help? Sebastian, you have.
I guess it's about the mid-range we're just talking about. The example I spoke about with Marilyn was, I want to influence someone to have a different view on a specific topic.
Mm-hmm.
That means I want to get in his brain, push a button, and then he's all green and he was all blue before.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit like that. So regarding that question, can I control that? Well, I sure hope so, that I'll learn how to do that, but how do I know? And if I don't know, what can that question really do for me?
Yeah.
I don't.
So what I would suggest is moving it back into the domain of, what can I change about my behavior that's going to invite a different response from another person? That if I, for example, if I use a certain kind of language or a certain kind of tonality, or I do my best to establish rapport with the person, then they're much more likely to be open to what I may try to influence them toward, kind of a thing. So that, again, the choice becomes about how you alter yourself, your communication, your state, that then would invite a different response from them, rather than trying to somehow directly control another person's behavior. And so, and these are, you know, these are nuances in meaning. Like, what do these words mean? And how do you interpret it in a way, because any quality could be a resource or a limitation, right? So we want to be able to, how do we interpret these words? How can we shift the meaning so that it becomes a resource, that it becomes a strength rather than a limitation?
Is that similar to authority? Because to me, my authority, my range of limitation, my rights, pretty much plays out to what I can control, what I cannot control.
So for you, authority means that you have a certain domain of choice
within the range.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Within the norm.
Sure. Yeah. And that could apply in many different ways, right? It could be like at work, you have a certain amount of authority given your job, and so there's authority that's given to you by your employer to make certain decisions.
Control.
Yeah.
That's what I cannot control. Right. So is that something I can substitute with authority when people don't feel comfortable with control?
Yeah, I would explore, if you're working with somebody else, explore what the word means to them, because it might mean something different to them than the meaning that we have for it. Because when I hear the word control, I think of choice. What do I have choice about? And other people might have different meanings to this.
The principle of requisite variety, control is pretty much defined by flexibility and adaptability.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so much can I make someone do something else, it's how can I adapt and be flexible in my actions to get what it is that I want. And the principle is basically that the element in a system that is most adaptable and most flexible has the most control or influence in that system.
Mm-hmm. What's the most powerful chess piece in the game of chess? Why? Why is she the most powerful? Right? She can move in any direction, any number of spaces she wants to. Okay? So in that context, she has the most requisite variety, as Damon is processing. So she has the most control on the board, right? So that's another way of thinking about it, is how much requisite variety do you have in the system that you're working in? And with NLP, we want to be able to increase that. Increase the amount of choice. And so when I say to expand your range and become systematic along the range, that's what I'm talking about. The more range you have and the more systematic you can be along the range, the more choice you can be, you're going to have greater influence in whatever system you're operating in. Big deep breath. So hopefully this was a helpful, useful exercise to help you get more specific on your goals for this class, because now I'm predicting that you will be much more likely to achieve your learning outcomes now that you've gotten more specific with it.